Moncrief on News Talk.
It's not too long ago that families would sit around the television and watch it together, a communal experience that's all but lost now thanks to streaming and each of us having our own screen. In a column in today's Examiner, the child psychologist Coleman Nocturne mourns that loss and relates his experience of working as a consultant on TV scripts, his most recent being an RTE show called The Unreal. Coleman, good afternoon.
Afternoon, Sean.
Now, it's actually difficult to know where to start with you. Let's start by talking about The Unreal, the show that you consulted on. When people are developing TV scripts, what kinds of things do they want you to look at?
It's generally if there's a mental health angle that involves children, and maybe it's usually content aimed at child viewers. So they're kind of saying, you know, do we do this concept justice in terms of things like parental mental illness or a child with anxiety, or if we're trying to represent something that's, I suppose, making sure that they're not kind of doing more harm than good in terms of it being too dark, or if they're more accurately kind of articulating that experience for children. So it would generally be, yes, something with a mental health angle. But I enjoy it. I have to say it's one of the nice parts of my job, to be honest.
You kind of... Can you be ruining the script on them in the sense you'd say, actually, that wouldn't happen? I know that's more dramatic, but, you know, this is actually more the reality.
Yeah, no, I've had to say that, you know, from time to time. And I don't think it has ruined the script, but they certainly have taken on board and said, okay, well, that's not what anxiety feels like. For most people, they don't describe it in that way. So maybe I would play down that bit and maybe amplify that experience because that's probably more accurate. So yeah, in almost every case, people will take it on. But no, I haven't had to, nothing's ended up on the cutting room floor too much so far. So
yes, okay. So we're still available for work. Any TV producers who are listening and won't rubbish your script on you. But I suppose what this kind of dovetailed into the piece you wrote in the Examiner about, and it's an odd thing because 20, 30 years ago, people had concerns about people watching too much television. But your argument is that that's a communal experience, a family communal experience that we've lost.
Yeah, I think like so many things, the kind of dial has flipped completely in the other direction. I suppose I would have broader concerns that the way in which technology is designed, it almost is designed for a very personalized experience. So the handheld device means that, you know, lots of people are, and I've speak to lots of teenagers in my therapy who are kind of, they're watching everything on their phones. So it's a TV show, and the kind of idea of a family watching something together seems to be something that's kind of creeping out. I can see it in my own family I have a 14-year-old, a 12-year-old and a 9-year-old, and trying to pick a movie night is like the Good Friday Agreement, you know, trying to get them all to agree on something that they'll watch. And I've tried to kind of, you know, keep that going because I do think there's something about a shared experience, you know, that's better than watching something on your own, so that you can talk about it or discuss it or remember that sort of thing. And I was just really struggling to find regular things for us to do, because I do think there's something about the communal experience. Also, the idea of, you know, gradually released things, like, you know, if something, because we can binge watch, and I hate that phrase, I can almost know the ending before everyone else, and there's no kind of water cooler moment about, I mentioned in the column about, remember Line of Duty, like who is H, or, you know, going back further, who shot JR or whatever the case may be. The idea that there was a kind of a gradual suspense that people shared, and I think there's something lost in that's more it's more technology giving us what we want rather than perhaps what we need, and I do worry about the personalized nature of it. I think it's affecting our capacity to form relationships and have that kind of tribe feel that I think is really important, actually, to fend against loneliness, to be honest.
Yeah, and I suppose even within particular age cohorts, because the algorithm is going, you'll want to watch this, even at that level, they're maybe not having that much of a communal experience in the sense of talking about whatever kids watch these days afterwards, because the different things will be pushed their way.
Yeah, I mean, not every 12 or 13-year-old is going to have the same algorithm. So, you know, if you watch, say, if you like something, I don't know, females playing electric guitar, then it'll just show you more and more females playing electric guitar. And from the point of view, if your friend is looking at something else, they're going to get a completely different feed experience to you. So it's not even that age groups are all watching the same content. It's your preference that designs your content, if that makes any sense. And so it's even more a disparate experience. And I suppose I talk about young people sharing memes and things like that. But that's not the same as a series or something that invests a little bit of fulfillment or a bit of labor over time in terms of like watching a series. I think that's qualitatively different, to be honest.
Yeah. And you're kind of making the argument, too, that that perhaps applies to music as well.
Yeah, no, that's I think we've just become so hyper individualized. And you can see that in terms of how we've become much more a song culture than an album culture. So we'll download one song rather than. And I remember buying albums because I liked two or three songs by an artist. And then I got introduced to the rest of the songs on that album. And it kind of broadened my horizons a little bit. But it was interesting. It was Richard Osman said that the number ones between 1990 and 95 were like 141 of the number one weeks in the year were bands. Between 2019 and 24, there's been 3 weeks where a band is number one. You know what I mean? And I think one of them was a group of soloists who were doing the kind of BBC Lounge Stars. One was the Beatles and the other one was Little Mix. So from the point of view of the last 5 years, we've almost seen bands kind of dissipate a little bit from that. And that's, you know, and maybe that's why people are paying exorbitant monies to see the likes of Oasis and things like that, because it's maybe not part of culture, you know. And as we move away from communal watching bands, if we don't see collective groups together, then we're going to assume that everything has to be solo. And I just, again, would worry about the messaging for young people, that it's everything is on your own. It's a real, become quite a meritocracy. You know, your successes are your own, but also your failures are your own as well. But that's maybe a different discussion. But yeah, I just worry that we're losing that sense of community and tribe year on year.
Yeah. And these as well, given that we, you know, we're we'll be heading into a general election fairly soon. There's one in full flight in the US where you have all sorts of communities in their own bunkers with their own version of reality. Then what our kids are doing now is that's the building blocks for that, isn't it?
100%. And again, like the whole idea of how our data is being used, I think we're not getting that at all, and we're handing it over to be manipulated. And, you know, I think people have a very narrow view of what that is. They think it's just my Google searches. It's not. It's absolutely everything. And with AI and how it's advancing, the ability to make those connections, and, you know, your AI algorithm knows you better than your best friend from the point of view of how to manipulate you. And like I said before, if I only get fed things about females playing electric guitar, I may believe that they're only females play electric guitar because I've never seen anything else. And again, that echo chamber piece, there's a real worry about how our information can be harvested, manipulated, and our choice architecture be completely controlled by kind of engineers in Silicon Valley. It does cause me great concern, to be honest.
So, and I don't want to turn this into a things were better in the past kind of thing, but like in even, you know, your bog standard TV shows, when families would sit down and watch the TV show, did they have merit in the sense of that people were learning things from them?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I would say that, you know, part of my growing up, whether it was, you know, the Rachel haircut from Friends, or, you know, watching, I think I mentioned the column kind of Highway to Heaven, or The Littlest Hobo, or 40 Coats, or whatever it was. At different stages in your life, you're looking at it and you kind of think, okay, loss is important, because at the end of this episode, they leave and you have to get used to that. That's a part of life. Or, you know, from the point of view of, you know, this is what a friendship group looks like in adulthood, and we need to emulate that a little bit. But of course, it integrates a kind of a value system because it's your culture. But I think if you're watching it on your own, then you lose out on some of the discussion base around, you know, that's real, that's not. I like that bit. I didn't like that. And again, I just think it's probably a deeper point, but discussion within society is kind of being less visible. And I think it starts there, you know.
Yeah. Though I suppose, like, young kids will still tend, or maybe I'm wrong in this now, but younger kids will still be watching kind of Peppa Pig or Bluey or those kind of shows. So there must be kind of a cut-off point where they suddenly don't want to watch those things anymore. And then they're kind of immersed in the whatever you're having yourself culture.
Yeah, and I mean, I probably, you know, if you remember Bosco, like Bosco was aimed, I think, from kids between the ages of 3 and 9. I would have watched Bosco till I was 13, not for any other reason than it was the only thing that was on. Do you know what I mean? From the point of view of that. But there's a point then where you move on and you're looking for different things. And the technology is occupying that gap. It's knowing that once Bluey and Peppa Pig are kind of gone, there's a window here for these 12, 13-year-olds to bring them to YouTube Shorts or TikTok or whatever it might be. And there's nothing really competing with that to hold them within a kind of a TV audience. I think they are a kind of a group. They're very hard to write for, but I think also they're kind of probably underserved in terms of content as well.
Yeah.
You know, we have to compete with the technology. It's not about, you know, we have to have a lure of children away from that as well.
Yeah. Though I suppose that kind of, well, maybe that's a bit young for this, but there is a process where, you know, as you know this far better than I do, where kids start to move away from their parents, and that suggestion of, let's sit down and watch something together, they kind of shrink away from it.
Yeah, and perhaps they need to do that a little bit. But the movie night maybe was something where the teenager who was in their rooms for 3 or 4 of the last nights would come down to watch that movie. And it would be the kind of almost the alternative to the family meal that it would be probably. And maybe that I'm falling into that nostalgic kind of idealization. But I do remember even my older sister, who was incredibly teenagey and grumpy, would have come down and watched a show because it was on, you know, whether it's a soap or something like that. And we would probably watch that together. But for me, it's just about an experience shared is better than an experience on your own. If we were down and we saw, I don't know, Brad Pitt in a coffee shop, we'd say, do you remember the day we saw Brad Pitt? If I just saw him on my own, then I can tell that story once and it kind of dies out a little bit, do you know?
Yeah, yeah. No, I do remember when some of mine were younger, I loathed The X Factor, but I watched it because they watched it.
Yeah, 100%.
And it wasn't really even about music anyway. They just sit there saying, I don't like his haircut and that kind of stuff, you know, rather than... actually, and I kind of wonder about those shows as well, because it just seems to engender this real judginess within the people who watch it, which they then carry with them to, you know, all the various other iterations of reality.
I don't think that's ideal, but the judginess is part of it. I don't know, I'm going to pick The Rose of Tralee, but most people watch that with a kind of a critical, cynical eye, I think, and there's a lot of kind of over and back around that sort of stuff. But it's still communication, and even if you are critical of something, I still think it's a shared experience. It's not about, you know, you all have to like everything. But if you have a discussion about it and an interaction about it, you learn something about someone else's opinion and they learn something about yours, I suppose.
Yeah. Now, going back to the Unreal that you did consult on, and you do say that you sat down with your own kids to watch it. I suppose a lot of people would be interested to know, what kind of bribes do you have to provide them to get them to do that in the first instance?
Yeah, they were cynical to begin with, because I said, oh, this is something I was working on. I think you might like it. And my eldest was like, oh, here's dad with another learning moment and air quotes and everything else. But actually and I think the fact of why it held was it's very relatable. It's an Irish show, the Irish accents, the Irish kind of actors. There was, I won't ruin it, but there's a kind of a fairy story piece to it, which is kind of central to it. But the characters in it, I think my children could see themselves in it. You know, it wasn't this kind of high school kid who looks 25, you know, driving a car. It was very much, there was a kid in it, the main character, Kevin, is struggling in school. He's not getting on with friends. He's feeling a little bit isolated. There's trouble at home in terms of the family isn't functioning very well. But there was something about that connection that I think my own kids found it relatable. And even afterwards, my youngest lad came back and said, will there be any more episodes of that being made? Because he kind of wanted to watch it again, which probably says to me that he did enjoy the experience, because we watched the first one. And then I said, do you want to watch the second? And they said yes, which I was surprised about. And then we kind of went through it. But yeah, the relatability, the story is connectable. And it's just, I think, Irish content. And we know all about the finances within Irish TVs. It's that we're under pressure and stuff. But good Irish productions are important, I think, for children and young people to have an idea or be able to watch that content, that it's not all from overseas or... Yeah. Different, if that makes sense.
Yeah. Did they talk about it afterwards?
They did. I mean, I was maybe asking a question or two, but there's one character in it that's interesting. She's kind of obsessed with social media followers, the older sister, like she's a teenager. And I said to my daughter, like, because it's clearly a caricature to that. And my daughter was like, no, that's just normal. That's not exaggerated at all. And I was thinking she would be real critical of her. And I just thought she was kind of envious of her in some respects. So that backfired considerably from a personal point of view. But they did talk about the dad being ill and how, like, dad was depressed and how the son, Kevin, might have felt that that's his fault, but it actually wasn't, that his dad was ill for other reasons. And again, there was kind of things about, there's a kind of time warps where there's a VHS recorder and stuff like that. And they were kind of
what's that, Dad?
Confused about what this thing, the post-rewind generation. So the idea of kind of explaining how that worked, and that you used to have to go down to the shop, get it, and then rewind it and hand it back 24 hours later. And you had a card. They were just absolutely bowled over by the cumbersome nature of this existence that we had. So there's a lovely kind of nostalgia piece about the past and the present, I don't want to say messaging, but there is certainly a message in it around families and mental illness within families. And then there's just a fun element to it, but the fact that it's relatable and it's Irish, I think, was one of the hooks for my three anyway.
Yeah, but the point being, it's still possible, albeit perhaps only very occasionally, to be able to get that shared experience and sit down with your kids.
Yeah, and I think it takes work, you know. I've had many attempts. I tried to get them to watch The Goonies or Back to the Future or whatever, and, you know, within 10 minutes they're wanting to watch something else, and for it just not grabbing them. So it's not that it works every time, but maybe persistence is worth it in this instance, because when you get, like, we went to Inside Out 2 a number of months ago, and I remember that was the last time we kind of had a good chat about something afterwards, and it really hooked all three of us, or four of us in that sense. But persist with it would be my view. I think there's something in the communal watching experience of the family that we almost have to hold a tighter grip on, rather than just letting it disappear. I think there's something in it.
Yeah. Colman Nochter is a child psychologist, columnist with the Irish Examiner and TV consultant. Colman, thanks a million.
Pleasure, Sean. Thank you.
Moncrief. Weekdays at 2 p.m. on News Talk.